Blog Talk Radio.
Welcome to Women Who Inspire. I'm Cynthia Pooler. My guest today is Susan Lindner, and she's going to talk about her organization, Emergent Media. She's a PR person. So, Susan, how are you today?
I am fantastic, Cynthia. Thank you so much for having me on.
Great. So are you doing anything exciting for the Columbus Day weekend?
Oh, I am sure going to get a pumpkin. I am going to get some cider and some donuts, and I am going to enjoy the beautiful fall foliage this weekend for sure.
Isn't it beautiful out today?
Oh, it's just lovely.
So tell us a little bit about how you got involved with public relations.
Well, it's a rather long story. I am not a public relations person by training. I'm actually an anthropologist, and I spent my first 10 years after studying in university in public health. And I spent a good amount of time. I spent about 3 years working in Thailand as an HIV educator, doing AIDS education with sex workers, brothel owners, and their customers.
Wow.
So that was my first foray into training and public speaking and storytelling. It became very clear that the only public health opportunity we had to prevent the spread of HIV at the time were condoms. And so I spent a good deal of time figuring out new public health messages that would help promote condom use, and also to give women who didn't want to be sex workers anymore the opportunity to become entrepreneurs, and to give women the opportunity to get into job training and vocational training that would allow them to create a future and a revenue stream for themselves. And after coming back to the United States, I had a short stint at the Centers for Disease Control and the New York City Department of Health doing AIDS research as an epidemiologist on the ground in New York's biggest hospitals all over the city. And then I met a fantastic technology journalist at Forbes magazine who encouraged me to take a look at this newfangled thing called the internet. And I thought, wow, I'd really like to get involved with that. And leveraging my history as a storyteller, I became a publicist for young and emerging tech companies and predominantly entrepreneurs who wanted to get their message out to the media. And that's how I got my start.
That sounds wonderful. So after traveling to the countries, Was it difficult readjusting coming back into the States?
You know, living in rural Thailand, I think probably one of the hardest things to get used to were the prices, right? My average breakfast was about 50 cents. My average lunch was maybe 75 cents or a dollar. So readjusting back to a New York economy was a big shift for sure.
So when did you create Emergent Media?
Yeah, well, I was working for a small boutique tech PR firm in 1999. And then, 2001, the internet boom had gone bust. And it was a pretty incredible time, right, from all the heights of this venture capital funding, cool new dot-com companies that were just getting started, and, the whole terror around Y2K, wondering whether or not, the computers and calendars would be able to sync up with each other. And then, with the internet boom crashing and then 9/11 happening, the internet boom had just collapsed. And the agency I worked for was going to close. And so my boss approached me and asked me if I would like to buy the agency. And I said, how much? And he said, $1 million. Oh. And I just kind of laughed to myself. And I said, I think my paycheck is missing a few zeros. And he said, you know, well, why don't you just pay me $100,000 a year for the next 10 years? And, you know, we'll call it even. And I said, you know, that doesn't sound like a good bargain for me. Thanks very much. And so I called all my clients and said, you know, you've heard the news. We're shutting down the agency. Can I help you find a new agency somewhere else? And my clients turned to me and said, why don't you open your own agency and we'll follow you? And so my old agency closed on a Friday and I hung out my shingle on a Monday with three clients on board. And that's how my agency got started.
Wow. So exactly what do you do?
So when I began the agency, we started as a full-service agency. So we offered branding, public relations, which is outreach to media outlets and getting articles placed for our clients, in addition to marketing. So we'd write beautiful content and thought leadership pieces, and also getting the CEOs and executives of our clients to speak at different conferences and events and exclusive engagements to better showcase their thought leadership and their company's products and services. And then later we added social media as a component to the work that we did as well. So we called it our Connect Four approach, branding, PR, marketing, social media, which we felt were the four elements that every startup needed in order to be successful in the market.
Now, you've been looking at the internet since more or less it got off the ground. How do you think the internet has changed society?
Wow, Cynthia, that's a huge question. That's a really big one. I mean, it's really impacted absolutely every element of our lives. I think it's made us more productive, and it's simultaneously given us more to do. It's created billions and billions of dollars in wealth for so many people, and job opportunities that you and I couldn't have imagined when we were in school, you know, are now some of the highest paying positions in the world. So I think it's made a shift for young people. I know my own son, you know, when he graduated college, he just got a degree in video game design and development. That field has exploded to surpass the revenues of Hollywood. None of that would have been possible without the internet. And I think it's made it an incredible impact on our ability worldwide to collaborate and communicate with people that we never would have had the opportunity to before.
You know, you live in New York, and I live upstate New York, and in recent days there's been articles in the paper about Regal Cinemas closing.
Yeah, bad.
So do you believe that film will be predominantly on social media and the internet now? In other words, do you think a lot of the movie theaters, because of COVID, are never going to reopen?
Yeah, I mean, there's something to be said about that really immersive feeling we get, right? When we go to the movie theater, we shut out the rest of the world, and the story comes to life on a big screen, and we can share it over popcorn with the person sitting next to us, right? That feeling is so wonderful for all of us. And yet, I think as a result of COVID, we've also become really comfortable sitting on our couches with that same person we care about and never having to leave the house. I wonder if people are going to crave that immersive experience again or enjoy the comfort of their homes more. I guess it remains to be seen. But there's something else on the horizon that's also really interesting, which is augmented reality and virtual reality, where we can slip on those big goggles, which are getting smaller and smaller all the time, and we can feel like not only are we watching a movie, but we're inside the movie. And, you know, that is probably the next generation of movie watching for our kids and our grandkids.
you know, the new technology has really changed people and how they think and what they see. And I think it's absolutely phenomenal. So as a woman, do you think the internet and the new technologies, do you think women are still underrepresented in the emerging technologies that are coming daily?
Yes. And we see the statistics. We know that fewer women are entering into the fields of computer science than they were 10 years ago, which is shocking, right, considering the opportunities. There's still some level of dissuasion among women in this space, and it's a shame because there is such a deep need for more women's perspectives and women's voices in the space. And we need mm-hmm. to encourage our girls. I'm so enlivened every time I see, you know, STEM programs for girls and girls who code, Black girls code, reaching out to different minority groups to make sure we have greater representation around women in tech. And I try to get involved in women in tech initiatives wherever I can. It's so critical.
So On a daily basis, kind of give us a rundown of what a day looks like for you.
Well, you know, my business has shifted over the last couple of years where emerging media has become more of an innovation storytelling consultancy. And there has been a shift over the last 10 years in general toward greater immersive storytelling rather than in marketing, rather than just quick taglines or jingles. We want to get more deeply involved with the brands that we know and love. And storytelling has exploded. So that means that we don't just want to know about, a product, a service, three product attributes and its benefits. We want to watch a commercial. When you watch the Super Bowl and you want to know that story of that Clydesdale and the puppy, you want to know the history of Coco Chanel. And as a result, in my field, in the tech space, we want to know more than just the cool new tech product that's coming out. We want to understand fundamentally how technology is going to make our lives better and the story that surrounds us. And so I spend my day working with startups and what I call grown-ups, Fortune 500 companies, helping innovators to tell the story of their innovation. And it's not a straightforward path, and it's unfortunate. Most innovators are great at innovating, but they have not had a lot of training in telling the story of their innovation. So that means that, and I'm sure you've encountered this, you meet some fantastic tech-focused or scientifically-focused or maybe even your doctor, someone who's been steeped in a completely different language around their specialty, who really has a hard time articulating the story in layman's terms, right?
Uh-huh.
And so helping scientists and helping technologists, engineers, product managers really talk about, tell me how you made it. Tell me why you made it. Tell me why it matters, and tell me how it's going to change my life when it comes to life, is what I help innovators do every day. And that gives me the greatest satisfaction. In fact, it's my passion to ensure that every innovation makes it to its finish line. And I want to help innovators do that by helping them to tell the story of that innovation.
You know, there's so many people out there with so many cool ideas, but yet they don't know how to get started. What would you tell those people, predominantly women?
On how to get started with your idea?
Yep.
Yeah. So depending on that idea is, first of all, write it out. Don't just leave it in your head. Because if it's still in your head kind of floating around, you won't give yourself the space to really conceive of all that it can be and all that it can do. And as you start writing, you'll find yourself engaged in a dialogue with yourself to say, could this work? What if it doesn't work? How could I hit off, how could I conceive of that next obstacle? How would I overcome that obstacle? And ultimately, what's the end point? What do I really want my idea to achieve? Does it help me? Does it help a small group of people? Does it help a big group of people? And really flesh mm-hmm. that out. Give yourself a couple of pages. And I would recommend, say, give yourself a week. Write three short pages, like a short notebook page, three short pages a day. And just let your mind go there. And once you do that, now ask yourself, what's the next best step to take? And then take those ideas, formalize them a little bit more, and send them back to yourself. Let it rest for a day or two, and then come back and read it. And then when you're ready, think about what that next step is. So if you're writing code, if you're formulating a prototype, if you are thinking of a new product or even a new service, now it's time to do a little homework. It's time to understand what the competitive landscape looks like and see what else is out there. It may be, because great minds think alike, it may be that your idea is already out there in some form or fashion. So it's good to know if there's competition on the market before you get there. And if the good news is that there is none out there, find out next who's going to be your most likely buyer. Who will you target? What is that demographic? How old are they? What's their education level? What's their income level? Can they afford your next cool thing? And then you want to figure out if there are other like-minded people who can help you bring it to life. And I think those are probably the four or five steps I would take to take that next idea to the next level.
Now, do you think that social media only enhances somebody's ability to network and find the right people?
I mean, this is how you and I met, right? You made a post on social media. I responded, and boom, you and I had never met before. And that's exactly this kind of social economy that's happening right now. It's pretty amazing.
So do you think that because of COVID, even though we sit in front of our computers and meet people that, you know, through social media, do you think that that's going to have as big of an impact as face-to-face? Because I don't think we'll be doing face-to-face for a while.
Yeah, I mean, this is really changing things for us. I don't know about you, Cynthia, but I just miss bumping into strangers, don't you?
Yes. Yep. And so many
cashier in the grocery store.
right. So many people are afraid. I visited a friend recently, and there were just the four of us, and she was so adamant about us wearing masks, even though it was social distance. I think there's a great fear out there. What do you think?
Sure. I mean, when, you know, everyone from your neighbor next door all the way up to the president is susceptible to getting this disease, it's no joke.
Right.
Mm-hmm.
Right. So how'd you come up with the company name Emerging Media? I really like that.
You know, it all started with the advent of social media. When I launched the company first in 2002, the company was called Lotus Public Relations. And as we saw social media growing in popularity, we realized that that public relations alone was too narrow a perspective on what we were doing. So we renamed the company, we rebranded as Emerging Media, because we wanted to be prepared for whatever the next wave of media was going to be. And that shift from going from reaching out to traditional media sources like the New York Times or the Wall Street Journal or different tech publications to now reaching out on Twitter and Facebook and LinkedIn and Instagram. So that was a big shift.
Mm-hmm. And, you know, what I like about the name of your company, Emerging Media, emerging is kind of like it's not a narrow focus because technology emerges and every day and every week, and what was good yesterday might not be good today. And I find that really, really exciting about the name of your company.
Oh, thank you. Yeah, I mean, you know, we always have to continue to grow and expand and evolve with the changing times. That's incumbent upon all of us, right? Otherwise, we get left behind. That's what I know for sure about working in innovation.
So when you first created this and the internet was just getting off the ground, you know, you've seen the internet explode, because back when Bill Clinton was elected president, there were only a couple of thousands of websites. Now there's, would you say billions?
Oh, absolutely.
You know, so, you know, in the span of like 30 years, it's increased like many, many times over. So how the COVID, has that increased your focus on social media? How has COVID changed the way you do business?
You know, so I've spent a lot of time over the last 3 years working as a professional speaker. I found myself invited to speak at conferences and to speak on innovation storytelling and some of the techniques that we were using with startups to get them noticed by the press and investors and others. And I found it surprising that so many people came up to me afterwards who were not startups, but were rather from Fortune 500 companies, who said, how can we get this kind of thinking in our R&D, our innovation departments, and so forth? And so I began working with companies like GE or Corning Glass or PwC and Deutsche Bank, large companies who said, we need this in-house. And so I started speaking to corporations and going there directly and doing talks and consulting work and coaching work with executives in the innovation and disruption space. Now with COVID, all of that has shifted from going and doing in-person workshops and in-person consulting to doing that online. And so, you know, giving virtual talks and virtual workshops has become part and parcel of the process. And I'll be the keynote speaker for the Society for Information Management at Boston, their annual conference on October 27th this month, all virtually. So it's pretty exciting to be doing this work, but now we have to make it as interesting and engaging as it is being in, you know, Patriot Stadium in Boston with 4,000 people in attendance. You know, you have to make it just as compelling, but while you're doing it from the comfort of your living room or your office.
Do you think that's going to change the way we interact? Do you think, you know, that there'll be a lot more Zoom meetings and conference call meetings, because, you know, you never really have to leave the house. All you have to do is turn on your phone and turn on your computer. So do you think that's going to be a standard in the future?
You know, I think companies are really going to begin to start assessing their travel budgets in a different way. And I think that's probably the fear of the airline industry more than anything, is that business is becoming accustomed to getting work done this way, as opposed to putting people on planes and sitting together in a conference room, recognizing both the health hazards, the time, the cost, et cetera. So I do think from a business perspective, there will be a shift and there'll probably be less one-on-one interaction. That said, though, we're human beings and we're social beings and we want to be in rooms together. And there's a different kind of magic that happens. And I'm sure you've also experienced this too, Cynthia, right? That after a while you get Zoom fatigue, you know, like you kind of feel like you're on stage when you're sitting in front of a camera all day. You can imagine what it feels like to be a newscaster or broadcaster because you're on camera in your own home. And that's a little bit exhausting too.
Right. After we get done with this interview, I've got to go to a Zoom meeting, as a matter of fact. But well,
there
you
go.
You know, in one way, it's good. People don't travel. They don't pollute the highways, and or maybe even if they take a plane, there's not as much pollution. You know, it has its good and bad. Wouldn't you agree?
Oh, absolutely. I mean, I don't know if you saw those incredible pictures with the canals in Venice with dolphins swimming in them.
Yes.
And, you know, smog alerts going down for the first time in places like Wuhan and Beijing. I mean, it really is a global phenomenon, and you get to see how humans really impact the pollution levels around the earth.
So we have just a couple of minutes left. Give yourself a little plug in how people can contact you.
Yes, absolutely. So you can visit me at emergingmediapr.com, or you can also go to my speaking, coaching, and consulting site, which is susanlindner.com. And I love to share with people the best ways to talk about innovation and tell the right stories around innovation. So, Cindy, if any of your listeners are innovators out there in large companies or in startups, I'd love to help them tell their stories to get the resources, the runway, and the recognition they deserve, because I want to see every innovation come to light, and that's my passion in life. That's what I really want to help people do. And certainly you can follow me on LinkedIn or on Twitter as well.
That's terrific. So in the closing moments, Susan, what would you tell people who are still technology averse? What would you say to people who are still afraid or do not want to use new technology and the importance of it?
Yeah, you know, I would say find what I call a reverse mentor, someone who is 30, 40, even 50 years younger than you. You know, I turn to my own kids. You know, they help their grandma, certainly. And, you know, find someone who's younger than you to teach you what you don't know. And also take a moment to teach them what you know, because I don't want this learning to only be one directional. There are things that an older generation can embrace and share with a younger generation that they don't have access to. So it's that reciprocity that makes learning about technology and not technology so important. They go hand in hand.
Thank you, Susan. You've been listening to Susan Lindner, and this is Women Who Inspire. I'm Cynthia Pooler, and if you like this show, like us on Facebook, Women Who Inspire. Thanks, Susan. I look forward to talking with you again. And thank you, everybody, for listening.